This is Pure Decking, show number 405 for Thursday, August something, 20th? Say the 20th? Yeah, August 20th, yes. 2020. It's the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and the fact that I actually had a really good day at work today. Vindication is nice. A really bad day at work for a lot of other people, but it is kind of nice to see the, you know, when you've been telling people about something for a long time. And then have them come and hand in the report in front of a whole bunch of people, and watching the people who didn't take what you were telling them seriously squirm.
You'd have heeded my advice. Now to the headsman with you.
Not quite that bad, but yeah, it's kind of like that shit I've been warning you guys about for years. Look what they're telling you. In front of a whole bunch of management. With screenshots and glossy charts and pictures. I mean,
the problem is when you're right, you're happy. The problem is when I'm right, fucking everybody else is sad. Real sad. And my 2020 predictions are going pretty well so far this year.
So, anyways, I'm Morps. Tonight, obviously, we have the RU. Hello, RU.
Up.
And we have the madman.
Hola, ¿cómo está?
You don't really speak Spanish.
Buenos tacos, mi amigo.
Papers, please.
I need no stinking papers.
We don't need no stinking badges. Anyways, that's a movie I need to go watch again. It's been a long
time.
Say
hello to my little friend.
Anyways. So, something a little different this week to start off with. First and foremost, I've discovered that there is a new eBay scam that is going around because I made a classic mistake. So anybody who does anything regularly on eBay knows that you have to vet the accounts that you're buying things from. They'll have ratings, and you can click on the account and look at them. And I made a mistake. I only glanced at the account's rating. This is probably why you shouldn't drink and buy things on eBay. but I forgot to check the age of the account. It was only a week old. Now, I've come across scams on eBay before, and it's usually not been too much of a problem because they've been fairly obvious, right? This one was a little different in that the listing looked legit. Looked good. Found out later it was literally copied from somebody else's listing, which is why it looked right. And so I attempted to buy the item. Did the whole PayPal thing. Right now I've got $100 floating in the ether because of this thing. So it's not a tremendous amount of money, but it sucks. And I'm not very happy about it. Now here's the fun part about the scam. Apparently, people are scraping. Or maybe they're just brute forcing and testing. Oh, it was a piece of audio equipment, DP View. For anybody who's curious, I was thinking about trying to do some other stuff with the live stream, and I thought a Traktor S4 controller might be fun to play with for that, for anybody who's aware of what that is. And I thought I was getting a fairly decent deal on one because I found it about $50 cheaper than what they would, maybe $100 cheaper than what they would normally cost secondhand. Which, again, it wasn't that much cheaper than what you would expect it to cost. Again, didn't quite catch it, you know what I mean? Just enough to get it to the top of the listings. But the scam is, what they're doing is, I guess they're brute forcing or scraping UPS tracking numbers. And if you've ever looked at a tracking number online, they don't give you the address they're going to unless you've got it tied to an account with like FedEx or something like that, right? They basically just give you the zip code of the city it's going to. So what the scammers are doing is they're searching these tracking numbers for one going to your zip code. And then they punch that in as the one, oh yeah, no, I shipped it. Here's the tracking number. Because eBay's systems, once it says delivered through a tracking number, almost all of their automated systems are designed to side with the person who sold something because they have a tracking number that says delivered. They don't have a system for dealing with a fake tracking number going to the correct zip code. So I've already talked to an eBay rep and, you know, dealt with this basically. And I'm kind of stuck in limbo because they've got, basically their system has no way to handle this. So what I'm stuck in right now is I had to request a refund from the scammer, right? It's like, yeah, that'll happen. Of course, they don't actually get paid till you go in and leave feedback saying, yeah, I received it and it's good. So instead, I've got a case open right now. And of course, the best thing in the world was I got a note back from the scammer saying, oh, yeah, no, we made a mistake with the tracking number. Go ahead and close your case so we can update it. Uh-huh. Because the moment I close that case, that money's gone, and I'm never getting it back. But instead, when I talked to the guy at eBay, he was like, yeah, our systems don't know how to handle this. Because he pulled up the tracking number and said, yeah, this is obviously fraudulent because it was shipped 4 days before you ordered it and arrived an hour after you ordered it. It's like, yep, that's right. And I think it's because I live in a smaller area, not quite as popular. So I'm thinking if you're like in New York or Chicago, this scam probably works fantastically because then they can probably get a tracking number that more accurately matches what it would be if they had shipped you something, right? So I kind of lucked out on that regard. And so they've got a note in the case that basically, yeah, it's obviously a fraudulent tracking number, but I have to go through the motions with this guy like they're a legitimate seller because of the way their system is set up. So always check the age of the account. Always check the age of the account and maybe don't have 4 or 5 shots of bourbon before you buy shit online.
But then I won't buy as much stuff online.
And, like that's a bad thing?
Wouldn't have Galaxy 15.
That's true. I did register that domain drunk, didn't I?
We have to fuel the economy somehow. And drunken eBay purchases are pretty much what we're limited to.
Well, if
that
I actually
drunken Amazon purchases.
Well, that. It, but I wouldn't care so much about it if I actually got the thing I was going to order. But I have no doubt this thing is never coming. So, I got a note back from the scammer today saying, hey, can you please close this case? We'll fix the tracking number. And so I sent him back a note. It's like, I can't close the case until either the tracking number in eBay is corrected. Because they emailed me. They wanted, you know, they sent me a message with a different tracking number in it. And it's the same damn thing. You know, the tracking number shows it was delivered today.
And it's like, you've got that item.
Huh?
Because you are doing a reverse scam of the scammer, right?
Eh, if I was actually going to get something, I might. But of course, you know, it said it was delivered today. Obviously, nothing showed up. And I'm like, no, eBay has to show this. Because in that system, if I close it out, they get paid and that's it. And I'm stuck because then I'm never going to get it, right? And I'm never going to get my money back. I have to go do a charge back through my bank. And that's a pain in the ass. So anyways, so yeah, I've just got to wait it out, and then next week I can call up eBay and be like, yeah, here's what's up. There should already be a note in my case for this. And then they'll just close out the auction, and I'll get my money back. And then it'll be in limbo for another week before it actually shows up in my PayPal account, because I know how this shit works. I buy enough random shit on eBay to kind of know how it works. But this fake tracking number thing was interesting to me, so I was doing some digging on it. And yeah, there are sites that are just brute forcing and scraping tracking numbers, so you can just search them by zip code and shit like that. So it's an interesting scam because eBay's auto systems have no defense for it, and if you don't call them and talk to a human their automated systems will find in favor of the scammer because they have a tracking number that shows delivered. Are you? I know you don't do anything on eBay. Madman, you ever mess with it?
I'm a bit paranoid.
Yeah.
I know they have a great track record for people actually delivering, but I generally go straight to a seller rather than buying crap on eBay.
No, fair enough. But so I just wanted to put that out there that that's one that's an interesting trick because obviously they found one that the system has no defense for other than just calling a human and getting somebody else to look at it and go, huh, that makes no sense. Because their automated system has literally no defense against this.
I'm seeing an update. They're going to want you to put in the date the tracking number originated and then the delivery date for future sellers.
Well, maybe. I mean, that's and then whether you'd think that would be a you'd think that'd be a simple one at least, like to pull up the tracking number and see when the label was generated. And if the label was generated, you know, even an hour before the purchase was made, what the fuck, right?
Like, here's the way here's the company we shipped it through. The dated into their system, and then if they're monitoring it, eventually they can key in the delivery date.
So, it is obnoxious, though. I mean, I have no doubt I'll get my money back. And it's not that I want to lose $100, but it would be more obnoxious to know that a scammer got it from me, you know? Like, if I lost $100 playing the lottery, at least then I knew I was being dumb and just doing it or going to a casino, right? It's like, yeah, you could argue they're still kind of scammers, but at least you're choosing to gamble. And I guess buying on eBay, you kind of know you're gambling a little bit anyways. But, I mean, if it's just...
No, there's a difference.
It's a flat-out scam.
An honest casino, you know the odds are you're going to lose. But you know what the odds are.
Yeah, they're putting in a very tiny little sticker on the side of the slot machine.
Yeah. So, you know that. But you still expect, if I'm playing within the rules, I have this chance to win. If you're going to eBay... You expect, I'm going to give you money and you're going to give me crap.
Yeah, I'm going to get something in the mail. Is it going to be as good as I expect it to be? Maybe not. Is it going to be potentially broken? Yeah. If they say it's broken, 9 times out of 10, that's okay because I like fixing these things. Or I'm buying them for parts half the time anyways. I have bought multiple busted things on eBay because I wanted the parts out of it. Ordered a broken laptop to get a screen LCD panel for a mod I was doing. I've got a couple of CyberDeck builds I'm working on, and Raspis aren't cutting it. I have discovered you can get used NUCs on eBay cheap, because you got guys running home labs who update those things all the time, and I don't need the things to be the latest and greatest, so it's like, oh, shit. So, yeah, secondhand Intel NUCs, which are tiny little machines, are super cheap on eBay. So, I've had good luck buying secondhand network gear and stuff like that. So, I'm not normally that wary about it, but also usually go check the account age, look how many ratings it have, because this account did have good ratings. And when I went in and looked at the account after the fact, I saw that all of the ratings were offer accepted ratings. Meaning that they went in and created a bunch of fake auctions with this account and then had another fake account, I don't know, bid like $1. And then they accepted it, right? So that then left themselves fake ratings so they could get the account rating up. Which is why it didn't stand out on the auction page. You actually had to go in the account and check it. And normally I do, but this time I didn't. And I got bit. So... Anyways, so for anybody else playing around on eBay, I thought that was, you might find that kind of interesting. I'm more interested in the fact that they're scraping tracking numbers, which, I mean, yeah, they're formulaic. I'm sure you can just increment by one and check the next one, and you could probably, I could just see how to write a script to automate the snot out of that and build a big database that somebody could search. Hell, people probably turn around and charge for access to that database. The ones I was finding were... examples that people's had. It wasn't the actual engines. So I didn't know if it was like a private service or maybe something on Tor, because I didn't dig that deeply. But yeah, and I mean, I doubt. Well, maybe. I wonder if the I doubt it. I wouldn't think the like the servers that do the tracking are doing any kind of traffic management to see, oh, somebody's just made 1.5 million requests to our API. Maybe we should block them because they're doing something strange. But then again, other websites like eBay and that actually embed the tracking information in their pages. So I could see where they wouldn't want to block repeat, you know, a whole bunch of traffic coming from an IP because they might think it's just a web server.
And it could just be a business. Whenever my place of employment sends out documentation, there's a tracking number. And whenever we're discussing this with customers or clients, we give them that tracking number. And on board one occasion, I've checked and said, according to so-and-so, this was delivered at this time and signed off by this person. Go talk to him.
Oh, yeah. So, and that's the fun part is I could go to UPS with this tracking number and get a letter from them stating, yeah, somebody gave you a bad tracking number. The addresses don't match. And when I was researching this eBay scam, that's apparently what some people had to do because the tracking numbers did line up better. But usually the indicator that it's a fake tracking number is it's just marked as delivered way too fast. You know, mine literally was marked. My phone popped up about 2 hours later and said delivered, which is like, what? It's like same day delivery
UPS.
From France? What the fuck?
But FedEx actually says where it was delivered whenever you have one of their numbers.
If
UPS doesn't?
No. Well, most of them, FedEx and some of them will if you've tied it to an account. Like, I used to have to do FedEx for another company, you know, create shipping labels and stuff like that. And when you're in the account, working in the account, yeah, you get everything, you know, for that tracking number. But if you're just working on, like, here's a random tracking number off the internet, no, you don't see the actual delivery address and signed for by such and such. You'll see things like, you know, signature accepted or driver released or left in mailbox or left by front door. But it won't say, signed for by, you know, Madman or, you know, Madman's, you know, personal prisoner with job. So.
That's had to have changed because I've pulled up FedEx's site. Well, addresses.
Well, maybe. I mean, FedEx maybe, but UPS and USPS, I've not seen addresses on. You want the fake tracking number? I'll give you the fake tracking number. You can plug it in yourself and see it.
Oh, I haven't had to do anything with the Postal Service.
This is UPS.
Though. I've done a lot of FedEx.
This is oops.
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 Oops, we dropped it.
Used to know a guy who worked at UPS. Always liked to. I always used to give him shit for that. It's like, how does it work? How is it to work for a place called Oops?
We guarantee that we didn't drop it more than twice or kicked it more than once.
Yep, yep. Dude, I've ordered some shit that comes through there, and when you get the boxes, it's like, well, I better take a bunch of pictures of this box because I'm going to have to file a claim. You open it up, and the thing inside has actually managed to survive. But I had one that looked like it was beaten with a baseball bat. Luckily, the person who packed it had used a lot of bubble wrap, so the thing was actually okay. But still, it's just like, holy shit. But anyways, any thoughts on that one, are you?
No, man. Interested to hear the process.
The process is I'm going to have to go back and forth with the scammer for another couple of days. And then next week I can call eBay again because then I've ran the clock on trying to work with the seller.
No, I understand. I'm just interested to see the outcome at the end of it.
The outcome is my money is going to come back into my PayPal account, but it's not going to show up for a week. Just because I've had stuff refunded through PayPal before, and it just usually takes that long to show up. And depending on how they refund it, it'll either go back into the card I have set up on it, or I'll have it sitting in my PayPal account, and then I'll either have to manually transfer it back to my card or just spend it from PayPal on something else.
Fuck, next time problems with Steam, dude, I'll just pay you $100 and you can fucking do all the legwork for me.
Oh yeah, it's a pain in the ass. I'm not happy about this. I'm chuckling at the scam, but I fell into it, right? Yeah.
I mean, you know, tip of the hat that you're gonna go after it.
Well, I'm not letting some. I mean, if it's a little bit motivating that it's $100, but since it's a scammer, I'd be going after him if it was $1. It's like fuck those guys, fuck everything about those guys.
I know, man. You're like fucking. You're getting your money back. That's cool. I just don't have that level of fortitude for $100.
Yeah, I mean, if I had lost $100 being dumb, like I was saying earlier, like, you know, playing slots or something, yeah, that's on me. I'm being dumb.
Well, it's because you use eBay all the time, man. You're like, fuck this, I'm going to do it. If that was me, my first go around, I lost $100, I'd be like, fuck eBay, I'm done.
Oh, yeah.
$100 is a bit different in our countries. How much is a carton of cigarettes where you are you?
Yeah, I know, $300, but...
How many cartons of cigarettes do you think I can buy with $100?
Four.
It's more
five.
Than one.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
Two. Used to be more like four, but now it's two. I saw those prices the other day at the store. It's like a carton of cigarettes, $50. What the fuck?
Wow. Fuck, the prices have gone up.
Well,
they have.
They've put a bunch more taxes on them because it turns out people who smoke don't just stop doing that on a whim. So
yeah,
they figured out they can tax the snot out of those and get money.
I've been battling trying to give up for the last 2 years, man. It's fucking crippling.
Chantex, you'll quit or you'll murder everyone in your house.
That's, yeah, I'm not. I don't know, man. I've heard nightmare stories about it. And I am going to be the 1% that goes on the murder spree and then wakes up 2 days later and go, what happened? Yeah, and I'm being charged with all these crimes.
I don't know about 1%.
What happened and why am I under a log in the middle of the outback?
Yeah.
I've talked to 12 people, and it's been 50-50 thus far.
Exactly.
Either it works great and they stop smoking within like a week or less, or they're going crazy and their family members have locked them in the closet and have flushed all the Chantex down the toilet.
Like actual literal psychotic episodes.
Psychotic breaks is a 50% chance of it.
Yeah, Chantix is not something you want to fuck with.
Yeah, you have to be really, really dedicated. And then I spoke to a dude who trimmed some of my trees. He did the Chantix. It was all good. And then 6 months later, he had a beer and started smoking again. You have to give up all your vices, your coffee, your beer, no social drinking.
Give up the one that wants you, makes you want to smoke.
But yeah, if I give up coffee and bourbon, what else is there to drink? That's like literally all I drink anymore.
Next, you'll ask me to give up sex and life.
I had that conversation with this specialist doctor of mine, and he's like, well, you just got to stop drinking and stop smoking. And so I told him a few stories. He's like, well, I suppose quality of life and all.
that's a fantastic. You just need to bring the clown horn with you. When he starts saying shit like that, just pull it out of your pocket and...
Well, it's really funny. The doctor's like, yeah, you're going to fucking die. Like, this... this is the reason I do X, Y, and Z. Well, I suppose if you're dealing with that, fuck, what's 20 years, man? Who's this shit?
You're going to die. Life. Everyone's going to die, I think.
Everyone's going to die. Like, how much suffering do you want to have?
I mean, I am basing that off of past performance of other people who've, you know, lived. But as far as I've seen, you know, we have yet to have an actual immortal flip walking around that I know of.
I'm a big proponent of quality of life. And if, you know, you've had some fucked up shit or...
I mean, we talk about one guy coming back from the dead, but he didn't stay on Earth, at least, not that I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, he had a lot of pull. His father had a lot of pull. look at dudes who got post-traumatic in that, they drink too much and, you know, smoke too much. They're battling with shit in their head that if you take those booze and smokes away, the demon becomes real. I mean, not everybody's shooting up heroin on the street is having a bad time. It's dealing with shit.
Well, you think about it, too. When you see somebody living on the street shooting up heroin, okay, they're not lucid, probably, if they're shooting up heroin, at least at the moment, but they're making the choice to stay there. There are almost always ways for them to get out of it, even if it is going to a shelter and getting in the government system. You made if it's that bad on the street, you'd go into the government systems.
Yeah, I'm not justifying why I drink and smoke too much. I'm just saying it's my life. I'll use the quality of it the way I want.
Oh, I can easily justify how much I drink. I work in security.
Yeah, but fuck, man, you know. Like,
you all have heard me get on TeamSpeak and rage about shit.
You could stop drinking and go on a vegan diet tomorrow, and Morps, you may get another 15 years out of your life. But what's that 15 years if it's just like, this shit sucks, I can't drink, I can't eat pork, I gotta fucking run. You know, unless you're really into it, who fucking really wants to do it? And I got no kids, eh, that I know of. I'll just clarify it that way, that I know of.
You can get that awkward phone call someday.
No fucking way, dude. That's why I don't have a mobile.
We'll get to that subject in a minute, because I want to do that one next.
I don't really see an issue with it if I shave 20 years off, man. I don't have a legacy to leave anyone. I'm not hurting anyone in my house.
And yeah, I think that's your, if that's the decision you want to make, I think you have every right to make it.
I made it early on. And very early on.
Them libertarian ideas of mine coming out, and it's like, hey, if that's what you want to do, that's on you.
Yeah, I was libertarian before I even knew I'm a libertarian.
Yeah, probably.
Anyway, quality of life, people.
So,
what's up next?
Well, speaking of quality of life, you know, I've mentioned a couple of times that I was kind of working on some, I mean, for lack of a better word, philosophy when it comes to modern computing systems. And I thought we could talk about some of that a little bit before we got into the stories. And pretty much we've got two, I guess, universes or models for how you use your data on a modern system, right? And I'm kind of classifying them as account-based or system-based. And, that, okay, for anybody who's technical, actually works in computers, this might seem like it's bleeding obvious. But it's not as obvious as you think, and I'll get into that in just a second. So just to explain it, account-based is where your information, your data, your stuff is not tied to any particular piece of hardware. It's on a system, usually on the internet, and it's tied to an account. So examples of this would be your Google account with Android phones, or your iCloud account with Macs and iOS devices like phones and iPads. macOS is going this way for desktops. Windows is going this way. If you try to install a home version of Windows 10 right now, and it even sniffs an internet connection, it will not let you continue the install until you hook up a Microsoft account to the thing. Now, it even has this thing on it saying, oh, you can go unlink the account later, but you cannot get it through the Windows install without attaching a Microsoft account to that install. And there's lots of examples of this, though. It's not just systems. I started with systems, but the more I started thinking about it, Steam, for example, all of your games are sitting tied to an account, not a computer. Back in the day, your games collection was measured by the boxes on your bookshelf or however many CDs you had in a binder. Nowadays, it's tied to your Steam account, and you just buy an extra hard drive if you fill the damn thing up. I picked up a Switch Lite a few months ago and played with it for a little bit. Not nearly as much as I probably should have for as much as I spent on it. But no, I did not buy one of the scalper ones. I actually waited for the damn thing to show up in a store, because I had a handful of games I wanted to play on it. But even the Switch Lite, it's all account-based. And generally, not always, generally, if you don't have an internet connection, these things are useless, right? So, and now, I know I'm kind of couching it like that's a bad thing. I don't think it always is a bad thing. I think there are times where it makes perfect sense to work in that model. The bad thing is that you have a lot of systems that aren't giving you the choice anymore. Because the other side of that, the other paradigm is the correct word, would be systems-based. That's where your stuff is sitting on your system. You know, it's on your hard disk, it's on your flash drive, it's on your device, and you control it. It's not synced up to a OneDrive account or an iCloud account. It's not that you have a copy on your system and you can use it. It's in, if you pull the hard drive out of that computer and you cannot access that file anymore, that's systems-based, right? Because it's tied to that system. There might be better words for these, but these are the ones I've been using in my head. I mean, have I defined those well enough, do you think?
I'm following you.
Okay. And again, I know this is kind of obvious if you live in the tech world and you know this stuff, but anymore, the default is all account-based, and to the point that you almost don't get a choice. And this is not actually the first time computers have been set up this way. You know, back in the very beginning, when computers were extraordinarily... yes, DPView, that's one of the stories I've got for tonight, and that's part of the why I wanted to talk about this, is because almost every story I have is this one way or the other. Yeah, he's talking about the Oculus requiring a Facebook account to set up a new headset. And you know, and that's what got me thinking. It's more than just your main operating system. You know, Android and iOS are probably the best example of this. Android, there are modifications to it. You can get different versions of it and flash it on your phone to get away from a Google account. But that requires flashing the phone or buying a device specifically that's not tied to Google. You know, that's a very conscious choice you're making. iOS, yeah, you can jailbreak it and get away from your iCloud account. But by default, these systems are designed to be work in this account-based system. And again, they're going to say it's cloud-based because clouds sound friendly. But cloud is not the right word because it's not, your data is not tied to, you know, some water vapor in the sky. It's somebody else's computer that you have an account on somewhere on the internet. And
you have a mainframe or a terminal now.
Exactly. And mainframes back in the day were set up that way because computers were so damned expensive, the idea of, you know, people having multiples of them on their desk didn't make any sense. But
that and the computer wouldn't fit on your desk.
Well, yeah.
The computer was in the basement heating the building, and everyone's terminals were on their desk.
You're not wrong. But... you know, back, you know, you think about back in, say, the Windows XP days, right? Or Mac OS, you know, like Snow Leopard, the stuff 10, 15 years ago, especially when broadband wasn't nearly as ubiquitous as it is today. All your data lived on the device. That was actually a novelty of having something like a BitTorrent Sync or Dropbox or something like that, where it was copying your data up into the internet so that you could get at it on multiple devices. But, you know, I've been playing around with a lot of classic machines, Commodore 64, TRS-80 Portable, stuff like that. And all of these machines are dependent on some sort of either local storage or you typing something into the machine to get it working, right? Like, you know, you turn on a Commodore 64, it's sitting at a basic prompt. And until you actually program it or hook a damn floppy disk up to it, or tape drive for that matter, and load data on it, it's useless, right? You know, a modern Windows machine or Mac machine, you turn it on, assuming it's, you know, not always on like a tablet or something, and the first thing you do is connect out to the internet and go look at, you know, information running somewhere else. And again, that model is not a bad thing, okay? The model itself is not a bad thing. And in some cases, it'll even make sense. But you have no control over it, really. if your data is sitting in iCloud and Apple changes their policies, do you really have an opportunity to react to that and get your data out of there? Or, I mean, you're seeing this kind of crap all the time where you take, you know, people have photos, compromising photos. That was the porn thing where they hacked
Fappening.
All the Fappening. Thank you. They hacked all the celebrities and got all their, you know, selfies, naked selfies from text messages and shit like that. Right. So that's because these photos weren't on their phone. They were in an iCloud account or a Google equivalent. And somebody else figured out how to get into them because that data lives somewhere else and is tied to an account. So your security is only as good as the account and only as good as the company holding the data. And again, it doesn't even have to be, you know, I was mentioning like, well, iTunes or Apple could change their policies, right? Well, they could. They probably won't because, you know, it'd be bad PR and all that. More likely, though, what if you just have somebody working there who is curious and just searches through people's photos? Now, you'd say a well-designed system, but no system is perfect. Or, you know, Facebook has had this happen where they've just had moderators who were, you know, moderating based on their own politics as opposed to, you know, whether or not it followed policy. How many times has Twitter done something to Trump's account and they said, oh, no, we had a contractor just do something they weren't supposed to do?
Or something that has happened, I know, with some photo sharing sites, the company goes out of business.
Yeah, and then it may really be gone, or it's bought up by somebody else, and then, you know, completely different model. And
some of the nicer ones will give you a few days to get your shit, but how often do you check your email? How often do you check your accounts?
Sure.
They may have been really nice in giving you 2 weeks, and you just didn't notice it until the day before. Then you're rushing to get your stuff, or you didn't notice it at all. Your stuff's gone.
Right. So now that's, you know, some of the downsides of the account-based model, but the upside is you're not tied to a particular piece of hardware. You crack your phone in half, you just go in the store, grab you a new one, log back in, you got all your stuff again, right? That's there's benefit to that. That's not a bad thing. But, you know, like if everything you have is stored on your hard disk, on your computer, and you have a house fire, and now that computer is gone, have you just lost everything? Yeah, probably. This is why, you know, when you're learning about computer security, one of the big things they talk about is data backups, you know, offsite backups, you know, because what if there's a fire or a flood or
portable hard drive in a lockbox at the bank?
Sure, you know. So, but, you know, I this is one of the examples I mentioned earlier, though, is if I have a physical collection of games or music, like, you know, a wall of CDs, right? And I die, I could leave that to somebody. If I die, does Apple let me leave my account to somebody? Their policies say no. We've talked about stories like that on Decking.
Yeah, it's pretty much you just don't let them know that the user's died and you're logging in with their password.
Yeah.
That's the way inheritance works with iCloud. I do actually have a wall of CDs.
Yeah, I know. You were backing up Netflix for a while there.
It's going to be real rough when the third generation Steam player is still around. You know, 196-year-old world champion.
But the other thing, and I'm keep waiting on this to happen because we've seen it with Amazon with eBooks. But I haven't seen it so much on other platforms. We have seen it with things like some of the streaming servers with like Netflix and Amazon and things like that, where they lose the rights to something and suddenly nobody can get it anymore. Or like, you know, they pull shows off Netflix. You know, you're assuming you can always watch it on Netflix. Well, no, if that show gets pulled off, you're done, right? So what happens when, say, Steam, for example, decides, yeah, you know, you've got a bunch of games in your library that are 30 years old and no longer licensed, so you can't download those anymore. It's like you paid for them back in the day. They're yours, sold under the presumption that you own it, but
it's
you don't.
30 years old, they go get a cracked version.
Well,
but you still have the license for it. The that's kind of different than the Netflix, because I know that I'm renting from Netflix. I know it's not a static library.
And
it's never been marketed that way.
I didn't intend to go there, but you make a very good point. You understand the implications of using that service, and that is the point I'm ultimately wanting to get at with defining these two models, right? Because...
But, so you're banking on the average normie doesn't realize that he doesn't own everything on Netflix.
Yeah.
Would have thought that's implied when you sign up and get charged a monthly renter's fee.
How many people have you talked to, are you, that just assume everything they have that's tied to these accounts is theirs? They treat it like it's theirs.
I've never really asked them, to be honest.
Yeah.
And really the only person that I've ever spoke computing with pirates more than I do. Like, he's less sophisticated about it, and it's definitely not the way I'd do it, but yeah, they pirate more than I do.
So,
for the fact that, you know, one of them doesn't want to wait around for the other one to watch it on Netflix.
Sure.
So they just, one records while the other one's watching, and the other one watches the recording later. I'm like, why don't you just rewatch it on Netflix? And I don't know. It's just the way we do it. Okay. But,
well.
And the other people that do use Netflix, they've just scaled back due to, they can't really afford it that much anymore.
Sure. No, and that makes sense. And, you know, maybe Netflix is not the best of examples because it started out as a CD or as a DVD renting service. So I think a lot of people still know that. But, the way a lot of these modern devices are set up to automatically go into this account-based system, and I can't tell you the number of people I've seen who just, oh, it needs an account, let me make one real quick, and they don't even think about it. They're just, oh yeah, no, I've got to you know, sign into that. And
what's? Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
So go ahead with your thought, because I was going to wrap it up so we could go to the news stories. But
oh, I was going to say, what kind of scares me about this and has happened, with ebooks, there have been people that have complained about the phrasing in older books, like Huck Finn.
Sure.
It uses the N-word in Huck Finn because that was a common descriptor.
Yeah, when Twain wrote it, that was normal language.
It wasn't even meant as a insult. It was...
It was a way of saying, adjective. That's a black man. Yes.
And if you've read that book... Mark Twain was writing from a very abolitionist, very their people treat them wonderfully point of view. So he wasn't even being racist when he's using it. But they've gone into anyone with a Kindle and have updated versions of Mark Twain to remove that.
So
not only do you not always own it, you don't always even have what you originally purchased.
Yeah, you don't necessarily have control over it. Actually, there's another example of that. We didn't talk about it on Decking, but that shooter I was playing, Ion Fury, I don't know if you guys noticed that one or not. It's where they went back, took the build engine, and made a new shooter with it. 3D Realms released it. It's a pretty good game. It had a whole bunch of that 90s humor, you know, jokes in it, right? Where they, you know, lots of little objects and things like that. And one of them was a soap bottle that said "Oh gay" on it instead of "Olay." And
okay,
people
I'm
threw
where
a,
you're going.
People threw an absolute. There was a SJW group that threw an absolute fit about this, and the company was going to go into the game and remove it. And there are guides in Steam of how to disable automatic updates so you don't get the censored version of the game. Now, they backed out of this and didn't do it because people made such a stink about censoring the game. But it's the same thing where the company that does Skyrim wanted to start selling mods. So I could see them going back in and blocking mod functionality so they could try to sell them to you. Now, they were taking mods other people made and then trying to sell them, so that's pretty scummy. But
that is scummy. I still have an issue with the concepts of ownership. I believe that if I purchase a game on Steam, I own that game. If I had an iCloud account, I purchased an MP3, I own that
certainly
song.
Certainly presented that way to you, isn't it?
Yeah, and if I want to give my... If I want to leave my iCloud's account to you when I pass away, you should be able to have, here's all the crappy music Derek listens to, and I don't care, leave it in. A slip. Leave all... Here's all that music.
Because it's such a unique name.
Yeah. And here's Madman's Steam account for all of our friends that don't have my all the games that I have. So if Morps is missing a copy of this and RU's playing it, RU and Morps are now playing that game. And if RU's missing a game and wants to play with Static, bam, RU's now playing that game. I should be able to just leave my accounts as I choose. So, I can see the argument of I'm only purchasing one copy, so I can't have it on 12 computers at a time. But it's still my copy.
Well,
I'm
more,
still
more accurately,
something.
You can't run it on 12 computers. You could have it installed on 12 computers.
Yeah, that's what I was meaning. 12 people can't play it at the same time.
Right. So the point with this, and where I'm wanting to go with this, is that both models have a place. And for a lot of people, that account-based model makes sense because it's easier. You know, I know a lot of people, and now this probably comes from working on the help desk at one point in my life, right? But I know a lot of people who just smash up electronics. It's like, oh, oops, I dropped a laptop down the stairs. They wanted a new laptop, so they, or, you know, I've worked with people who decided it was time for a new phone, so they threw theirs out the window of a moving car. And it's like, what are you doing? And like, I want a new phone. So they think nothing of destroying the hardware because they're not going to lose any of their data, right? Whereas back in the day, formatting your computer used to be a big-ass deal. You had to make sure you got everything off of it because if you didn't, it was gone.
Hell, still formatting your computer is a fucking pain in the ass.
Yeah. Nowadays, with Chromebook, everything's on the account. Who cares? Say, what are you?
I mean, back in the day before, you know, large external hard drives, you have to plan a fucking format weeks in advance.
Oh, yeah, I've done the whole burning the spindle of CDs to be able to format a disk.
Fucking
sure.
Showing my age now. Backing shit up on the floppies.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then trying to find that one disk that you know that you did burn, but you want that fucking game. Yeah.
Yep. So... the point I'm wanting to get to is to know when to use which system, but because so many of these systems aren't giving you a choice anymore, it seems like if you're wanting to run a systems-based, you know, data management, you know, where it's on your stuff, you either have to go through a whole bunch of hoops to take one of these systems that wants to be account-based and force it to be system-based. You know, such as strategically disconnecting your router when you're setting up Windows 10 on your laptop so you can actually get the thing set up without a Microsoft account. Or run things like Linux. And
it's coming to business models. Microsoft is trying to just charge you a licensing fee rather than, or do it more of a subscription service rather than.
Well, they want you paying for Office 365. How many, you know, you know, you think about it nowadays, how many low-end laptops come with almost no hard drive on them, just enough to run Windows, and, oh, a free year of Office 365 so you can, you know, use it and keep your data. And again, is that necessarily a bad thing? Not really, especially if you're dealing with somebody who's going to smash up a laptop or the, you know, like kids or something who aren't going to be able to keep the laptop for a while, or, you know, maybe it's a thing where the hard disk is... And granted, storage is not expensive, so it's not a good argument, but, you know, maybe the machine only has enough, you know, enough storage to hold the OS and that's it. You know, you have things like Chromebooks where it is Linux, but it's all tied to a Google account and everything's stored in your account, not on the machine. Anybody who's messed with having a Chromebook and more than one knows that you change the wallpaper on one, you log into the next one, the wallpaper's changed there too because it's based on your account, not on the machine. So I'm worried that the systems usage base is going to be relegated to hobbyists, people who know how to set up Linux, or people doing things like Raspis, not mainline machines anymore. I mean, gaming is going to be done on consoles, PS5, Xbox, whatever. And, you know, the only people using actual computers are either going to be people who need to use it professionally, like developers or high-end media and that kind of thing. Or you'll just be on tablets and iPhones and everything will be in the cloud. And if, you know, if somebody sees a command prompt, they're going to scream hacker and you'll be dragged off. You know, a little dystopian well,
that's
there.
Why,
but...
That's why I'm not setting up my main rig at a fucking Starbucks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason to wear camo in the bush, and there's a reason to wear a suit in the city. You know, you don't want to stick out. If you know your shit when it comes to computing, don't show your power level in public, man. Especially with the fear every fucker has right now. And if this fear of computing goes further into the future, where we start looking at anybody who understands old world command lines and shit like that as hackers or some sort of threat to the nation.
But I don't even think it's being pushed by a fear of people that knows computing. I think it's being pushed by software developers wanting to make more money. Like, how long did people use Windows 2000?
About 3 or 4 years.
I used it until the video games stopped working on it.
Yeah, no, I understand. But,
well, let me just ask you this. If somebody, I'm going to throw a link into the IRC and into the chat here. Oh, let me put it on the right one. So this is off the r cyberpunk subreddit. If you see somebody whip one of these out at a school or a Starbucks, I mean, somebody's going to scream bomb. But that one's very likely systems-based because it's, you know, very clearly a functional built machine.
I mean, dude, that just... You might as well call yourself Clock Boy and call it a fucking day at that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
It's just that I've seen actual bombs and I've seen computers and that doesn't look explosive.
Yeah, that's no bomb, but... You know, you
don't need it to be. Somebody
attention.
Else is going to see that and fucking panic and think it's some...
Exactly.
I mean, it's made to look like a movie prop, but somebody's going to go... You know, somebody's going to see that, shit a brick, and call the cops. I mean, it's like, they're hacking into the Gibson or whatever. Nobody's going to get that joke. Never mind.
I mean,
Hackers? No, that's a good movie. If you don't get the joke, the movie's Hackers. Go watch it.
Anyway, so the whole point of this is to try to figure out what's accounts-based, what's system-based, and figure out when you should be using each. And that's a tall order for most people, because most people just want to, you know, they don't care how it works, they just want to be able to turn it on and use it. So, anyways. Interesting thought experiment, though. You guys ready to blaze through the news articles, or...
Yeah, I'm cool.
All right.
Going an hour.
So, first one up, RU sent me this one. This is from BBC.com. Phones could detect drinking over the legal driving limit. Smartphones can detect when you've had too much to drink by monitoring your walk, a study has found. American researchers used sensors in smartphones to detect when somebody was over the legal drink drive limit. Phones were able to do this with about 90% accuracy when users walked just 10 steps in the study by the University of Pittsburgh. Scientists hope the discovery can be used to help develop device alerts, such as asking people not to drive while drunk. We have powerful sensors we carry around with us wherever we go, lead researcher Brian Supiletto said. We need to learn how to use them to best serve public health. The study had 22 participants aged 21 to 43 who were given a vodka and lime juice drink every hour until they reach, well, they're drinking vodka, that's your problem, until they reach 80 milligrams of alcohol per 100 milliliters of blood. Why didn't you just say what the blood alcohol level was? Why go with this very... Oh, well. In the U.S. and in England, Wales, Northern Ireland, the alcohol limit... this is the alcohol limit for drivers. In Scotland, the limit is 50 milligrams of alcohol per 100 milliliters of blood. With a smartphone strapped to their back... Not holding it, strapped to their back...
That's not useful.
Participants performed a walking task every 2 hours, walking a straight line for 10 steps, turning around and walking back. About 90% of the time, the researchers were able to identify those over the limit, though changes in gait height through changes in gait highlighted by the phones. One application could be to notify users who may not think they are impaired that they should not drive. I just lost a close friend to a drinking and driving crash in college, Dr. Suffoletto said. And as an emergency physician, I've taken care of scores of adults with injuries related to acute alcohol intoxication. Because of this, I've dedicated the past 10 years to testing digital interventions to prevent deaths and injury related to excessive alcohol consumption. Although this is a small preliminary study, scientists hope it lays a foundation for further research. They want to carry out an additional experiments in which better mimic how people actually carry their phones, like in their hands or pockets. Yes, as opposed to duct taping it to their back.
And when they can get 90% accuracy with that thing either in a carrying case on my belt or in my front pocket, then we can discuss things. If you have to strap it to someone's back, it's a cool concept, but hasn't gone beyond the "this could be a cool toy once you figure out how to do it" phase.
So how much is Apple going to charge for the no tattling feature on their phone?
But the reason they strapped it to their back, Madman, it wasn't because it doesn't work in the phone, in the front pocket or in the belt clip. It was continuity of position on the person. So exactly between the shoulder blades or something is proof of concept of what they were going with. So you have to have, but I would say if it's 90%, it's probably 70% in the pocket or a clip to the belt.
But is that because they're building a profile based on each individual user, or is it like, okay. Yeah. So your phone has to learn how you walk normally and then compare it to how you walk drunk. So if you're just always drunk, this isn't going to work.
Well, then again, you got a disability or a limp or, say some sort of issue with muscle spasms. How good's it going to be?
Oh, yeah.
The limp could be fine. It's going with your base walk compared to your drunk walk. So do you – I think drunk people limp differently.
Yeah. I just recommend everyone start leaving your phone at home. Practice it now.
I mean,
get the grief out of the road with.
You know, there's always going to be somebody's going to have their phone because everybody has them, right? So if only one person in the group has their phone, you can always say, "Hey, somebody Google this," and like five people in a room, random that you don't know, will Google it for you.
Yeah, but what if I actually have to make a phone call?
That's the way you have the one person
memorizing phone numbers 10 years ago.
That might be a problem.
you're doing it to yourselves.
I know. I can still memorize phone numbers. I used to know every person's phone number that I hung out with, along with like 20 relatives. I could spout them off or call them from any phone anywhere on the planet. And now they're programmed into my phone. And if you have a phone that's 10 years old and you've had the same number, there's a slim chance I might remember it and can call you.
Well, again, I'm thinking this is more along the lines of, the thing's going to be notifying the police when it thinks you're in a car and drunk. This is where you have to pay for the no tattling feature.
That's what I toss in the passenger seat. He doesn't know whether I'm walking or driving at this point.
Well, then it just assumes.
Yes, Apple, I can sprint at 65 miles an hour. Now shut the fuck up and leave me alone.
So you don't want that app on your phone? So you're for drink driving then, aren't you? No, I just don't want to have that app on my... Oh, so you're against children walking safely.
Yeah, that's how that goes.
They're just going to keep folding this, man. You ought to fucking take a stand.
If you don't have the drunk monitoring phone app on your phone, you know, you're a bigot or whatever the accusation will be, or, you know, you want to kill kids.
If we're going to go that, we already have better technology than the drunk driving phone.
Yeah,
we have the breathalyzer ignition. It's been around for a while.
Apparently, those things false positive a little bit easy too.
Yeah, and they're not real accurate, and then fucking don't work all the time, and they cost thousands of dollars to install and maintain. Fuck it, just give everybody an ankle bracelet. You know, modern 24/7.
Well, give them an ankle bracelet. They already have an iPhone. You're doubling up, are you?
So, anyways, next article. I'm just now realizing we're at the hour in, and, you know, I've got three more stories. So it's like, oh, well, we better blaze through these real quick. The next generation of virtual reality headsets remains unclear, but the VR software ecosystem just firmed up an unsurprising and potentially unwelcome requirement for a huge swath of users. Starting this October, anyone brand new to the Oculus VR ecosystem will be forced to log into devices using a Facebook account instead of creating and logging into a separate Oculus-specific account. If you already have an Oculus account, which is free and doesn't require an Oculus-branded headset, you can continue using those credentials for existing headsets until January 1st, 2023, at which point all connected Oculus devices will not function without a Facebook account. So,
guess who's never buying an Oculus?
Update, and the update was put in today, which is not when I skimmed, you know, this is after I skimmed the thing earlier. After this article's publication, a Facebook representative clarified to Ars Technica that this restriction is even more severe than we previously understood. All future unreleased Oculus devices will require a Facebook account, even if you already have an Oculus account, the representative wrote. Now, what's really frustrating about this, Oculus... I have a couple of, you know, I have the Oculus headset, the Quest. And for some very specific legit reason, didn't make an... Oh, okay. I gotcha. And, you know, the thing was never really sold as not being a connected device because it runs Android. But... you know, you could use it with an Oculus account, not a Facebook account. And now they're pulling the old switcheroo. They're saying, oh, no, you have to use an account to use it. It's sort of like what Microsoft is doing with Windows. They're really, really trying hard to tie it to an account. So,
well, the bigger problem I'm seeing isn't that they're trying to tie this to account, because it was already going to be tied to an account. But as far as security on what your accounts are, they have something that is... fairly large. I'm not going to say Oculus is small, but they've got something that is a niche environment for a smaller clientele being pushed into an exceptionally large clientele. So the odds of you being targeted have just increased, not because of a change in your behavior, but because of a forced change to your account. So what if all I was doing with my Oculus was playing stupid virtual video games and I avoid Facebook because I just don't want the cancer of Facebook? For someone to track down and target me, they have to target Oculus specifically and then randomly find me. Oculus wasn't that huge of a target for scammers, in my opinion, at least compared to Facebook. And now I'm being stuck on something that scammers... fish for information, because it's pretty much a large public depository of information.
Well, you know, how about something like this? For a lot of people, a Facebook account's something kind of like a resume. I know employers will search out your Facebook account, and if you've got something really goofy on there, a lot of times that can make it harder to get a job. At the same time, every time I've talked to anybody at work about using the VR headset, somebody always invariably asks me if you've watched porn on it yet. And it's like, no. It's like, why not? Well, really, because I didn't think about it. But, you know, okay. I can see that being interesting. And I'm wondering, are there going to be more activities other than just playing some of these games that you may not want to advertise that you're doing with a VR headset, you know, just from a privacy standpoint? You know, porn's the easy example, but, well, what about that VR game you were telling me about? Are you the one I still have yet to try? You know, it's incredibly violent. You know, you're ripping heads off and throwing swords and shit. You know, I mean, I could see somebody going, oh, you played that game. Well.
Conan the Barbarian comes to VR.
Yeah. So... but you're right. You are being exposed to a much larger ecosystem of things that you possibly don't want an account tied to.
Yeah, so that's what really annoys me about that. Whenever I'm setting up an account, I have a basis of how much risk am I willing to associate with that account.
Yeah.
If you're particularly trusted, I might use one debit card. If you're not, I may go out and get one of the burner cards to associate with that account so that I know the max amount of money I'm going to lose is 1 or 2 months worth of subscription fee to you.
So, though Oculus' official announcement begins by trumpeting how this change will improve the Oculus VR experience, it concludes with the exact kind of information sharing and tracker-heavy deluge that many Facebook critics fear. When you log into Oculus using your Facebook account, Facebook will use information related to your use of VR and other Facebook products to provide and improve your experience. This information is also used to show you personalized content, including ads. For example, we might show you recommendations for Oculus events you might like, ads about Facebook apps and technologies, or ads from tech developers for their VR apps. And, yeah, I mean, come on.
Targeted ads may be better than just random ads, but that's...
You don't get a choice in the matter. That's the problem.
A marginal improvement to their business model, not a marginal improvement to my experience. Because their business model is selling me ads. So if they're selling me ads more targeted to me, okay, it's still their business model. They're not telling me how this being hooked up to Facebook is making me playing Space Ninja Invader 2045 better than me playing that with it not being hooked up to Facebook. Because that's the improvement to the service I'm getting. You understand where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
Because, like, if they're sending me ads to something that I'm interested in, that's cool. But that's their model. That's not my enjoyment. That's not why I'm doing this. So if they're saying this is going to improve the Oculus Rift, they're going to have to explain to me how this being hooked up to Facebook is going to make the video games I'm playing better.
The only thing it's going to do is tie it into social features, except those social features already existed through an Oculus account. Literally. I know, I have one. I have a Quest. It already does friends lists and high scores and all that shit through an Oculus account. You know, now it would be better through a Facebook account. No, it won't be. Same damn thing. Just now it'll be tied into Facebook's, you know, data sucking engine. But apparently even using the Quest Link feature is going to require you be signed into Facebook. So anybody who doesn't know about that, with the Quest you can run a USB-C cable from the headset to a PC and use it like it's any other PC VR headset. So, you know, it's like, "Oh, I just won't sign in to Facebook. I'll just play Steam games on it." No. It still won't work unless it's signed into Facebook. So, yeah, it basically goes dead in 2023 if you don't have it hooked to a Facebook account. So, well, it'll be time to maintain multiple Facebook accounts so you can just have a dead account that all it's used for is your Oculus stuff, I guess.
Oh, and this is hardware that you bought.
Yeah,
it's expensive hardware. Actually, don't want to be on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
That's crap.
Yeah, expensive hardware. Now, granted, by 2023, it'll probably be obsolete, anyways. But still,
they're going to be coming out with a better version.
That'll be the new ones require you getting a Facebook account, so. You know, if you want to continue playing in the Oculus world, you don't get a choice. And again, that goes back to this whole, you know, what if I wanted to use it without hooking it to a Facebook account? It's my hardware. You know, they're just going to say that's not supported. Too bad. Sign into Facebook and let us suck up your data. I won't be buying another one. I can tell you that. Which is too bad.
Unlimited
it's a fun
data
device.
Isn't a true thing, at least not for most people.
No, I won't be buying another one, and that sucks because it's a lot of fun. But nope. Of course, eventually not having a Facebook account will be, you know, used against you in a court of law. So
it's a business model for a possible competitor.
I want you to read every URL, Your Honor. Every URL.
Sir, you some of these look rather... I mean, your lawyer
every
recommended...
URL.
Word
I believe
for
this
word.
One you're giving up a kidney.
It's like, you know, by page four, the judge is just beet red and hiding under the desk.
That's what I mean. I'm just going to be sniggering like a fucking 12-year-old who's just seen his first titties. Fucking half the jury's puking in their fucking handbags. Why would you want to watch that?
I don't. I wanted to make you say it out loud.
My plan all along, man, as I stroke my white cat. No, I didn't want to watch it. I just make you read it.
Oh.
I planned this for 10 years, Your Honor. Now read the URLs.
Do you have something on that, Madman, or do you want to go on to the next one?
I pulled up the next one and it's hurting my brain.
Toyota. This is from the Register. Toyota has expanded its collaboration with Amazon Web Services in ways that will see many of its models upload performance data into the Amazonian cloud to expand the services the automaker offers to drivers and fleet owners. Toyota already operates a mobility services platform that it says it helps to develop, deploy, and manage the next generation of data-driven mobility services for driver and passenger safety, security, comfort, and convenience. The data comes from a device called the Data Communication Module that Toyota fits into many models in Japan, the USA, and China. Toyota reckons the data could turn into new contextual services, such as car share, ride share, full service lease, and new corporate and consumer services such as proactive vehicle maintenance notifications and driving behavior-based insurance. I don't want driving behavior-based insurance. My insurance would probably double. The company has touted that vision since at least the year 2016, with precious little evidence it was turning into products that are available. Which is maybe why Toyota has signed with AWS for not just cloud tech, but also professional services. The two companies say their joint efforts will help to build a foundation for streamlined and secure data sharing throughout the company and accelerate its move towards CASE, connected, autonomous, shared, and electric mobility technologies. Neither party has specified which bits of the AWS cloud Toyota will take a spin, but it seems sensible to suggest the automaker is going to need a lot of storage and analytics capabilities, making S3 and Kinesis the likely candidates. Whatever Toyota uses, prepare for privacy ponderings, because while the cheaper car insurance sounds lovely, it won't be cheaper for most people. Having an insurer source driving data from a manufacturer has plenty of potential pitfalls. Yeah, no shit. So... you know what we were talking about earlier about, you know, account-based systems versus systems, you know, systems-based mm-hmm. data, and not knowing if not realizing the choices you're making with some of this stuff. Because, again, it's not that Facebook has a right to your data. It's that you're giving it to them by using their products, right? Or in this case, Amazon and Toyota. But... I mean, if I don't want my data on my car getting uploaded to Amazon constantly, because knowing how car manufacturers work, how much is Toyota going to charge me to disable that module?
You've just given me homework for tonight.
Are they giving you the option, or do you have to fry it yourself?
I'm betting you got to fry it yourself.
I can see a very lucrative market in workarounds. You know, mainly. Ooh. Yeah, you give me some real thinking work here, man.
And how many? And I mean, it's going to be things like, oh, your data module's not working. We can't service your car.
That's cool. Because what if we take nice clean data and just feed it to it? Disable the real
just,
data.
Just have a little SD card you switch into it. Well, no, it's all cloud-based. Yeah, so you just have to feed it dummy data the entire time. Yep, no, drive it once a week on Sundays to church.
I'm just trying to think. You'd have to get around the telemetry computer.
You take another computer and feed fake data into it.
But the what annoys me is they're feeding this to third parties. My insurance company doesn't need to know anything about my fucking car other than the condition when they start insuring it.
So we see you take most of your turns at a 45-degree angle. We're going to quadruple your insurance.
Well, that's what a lot of modern computers in the cars do. And when you take it to your dealer, you can't see the inverted commas I'm throwing out. Your dealer, the dealer doesn't tell you that they're downloading all that telemetry and then sending it off to corporate. This is why you should always get your car serviced at non-dealerships. And get to know your mechanic.
Yeah, yep. I have this nice little Mexican dude.
Mm-hmm.
I don't speak a word of English. His son will call me later with the price.
Yep.
Car broken. Okay. Call you later with price. Fixed car. Very good. I know he sounds Chinese, but the dude's Mexican. They both eat rice. Very nice guy. Gives you a range of how to fix the car. It's like, with this problem, it could be this, this, or this. And remember, you're not living in California. It's not like they're going to be testing for these first two things. So we can fix it one of two ways. And here are the prices for both of them. I leave the choice up to you, my friend.
Well, you now have a straight-through exhaust. Forget about the catalytic converter.
I don't know what you're talking about. My car is completely road legal. And compliant with whatever the fuck it's supposed to be compliant with.
As far as I know.
Your Honor.
And the repair was only $50 because he thought it took too long. I love my little Mexicans.
Yep. That is the number one tip for a functioning male in this world. Know your mechanic.
I get nothing to top that.
Or get back to do yourself.
Oh, yeah, never lie to your doctor and never lie to your mechanic. You'll get found out either way.
And the last article I have for tonight is from Forbes. 235 million Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube user profiles exposed in a massive data leak. The security research firm at Comparatech today discussed how an unsecured database left almost 235 million Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube user profiles exposed online in what can only be described as a massive data leak. Recently, there has been a spate of reports concerning account data appearing on dark web cybercrime forums. From the dark web audit suggesting there are currently 15 billion stolen logins from 100,000 breaches out there, to the hacker giving away 386 million stolen records for free, not all this data will have been hacked, at least not in the usual sense of the word. Some, as likely the case with the Utah Gun Exchange incident, will have been exposed by an unsecured database. So the article goes on, but basically you're looking at profile name, full real name, profile photo, account description, and then some things like number of followers, engagement rate, follower growth rate, audience gender, audience age, location, likes, last post, timestamp, age, and gender. So this is obviously some social research company's database was leaked. They're talking about Elasticsearch.
Those three different companies?
Yeah, it's probably one of those social media marketing companies.
Okay.
Yeah, the ones that gather up data on accounts and then try to sell things. Wait, no, that's audio. Oh, I meant audience location. Did I misspeak? I might have. I've been drinking. Fuck it. So, again, this goes back to that account-based, systems data. You're trusting these systems to be set up and managed correctly, and it doesn't have to be malice that causes problems. It could just be incompetence or mistake. So anything on that before we do Dojo and close it out?
No, I'm good.
No, I think we kind of discussed this earlier with the whole where does your data live? Because whatever it doesn't live on your computer, I don't really know how exposed you are.
Yeah, I mean, and I want to keep keep kind of working on that because it's, I mean, it seems obvious to anybody who works with this stuff on a regular basis, but it seems completely lost on a lot of people I've worked with. So, you know, outside of this TeamSpeak server. So there's a question. What do you all think this TeamSpeak server is, account-based or systems-based? Because I'll tell you what I consider it.
Oh, it's account-based. I don't control it. It's not on my computer.
Yeah. I've set it up like it's systems-based because it's, you know, but it's living in a service provider's account. So technically it's account-based. I'm just not doing anything with the data.
On a computer in your apartment, I'm not running it.
Yeah.
I'm trusting you with whatever data my computer sends to it.
Which it's one of the things I like about TeamSpeak. Your computer sends audio data to it, whatever you put in the chat boxes, and then a little bit of metadata so you can connect to it. That's really about it. But I'm not doing anything particular to keep it from logging. In fact, I keep the logs turned on because they're useful when I have problems. So, yeah, everybody's connections to this server, it is logged. It's not going anywhere unless I have a problem, but, you know, technically the logs exist on the box. So, you know. Anyways, did I hit the sound effect button yet? I only got one thing for you tonight in Digital Dojo. It's mostly because I thought it was interesting. It is this project called Cockpit. And specifically, because we were talking about doing a lot of Linux management earlier, this is a modern web-based control panel for a Linux server. It exposes a lot of different settings and systems configurations, sort of like the old Webmin tool, except it's a little bit, it's a modern tool and it's much better integrated into systemd and the Linux management and things like that. So it, like Webmin could actually get out of sync if you made changes in the terminal or spun up things in the terminal. Like if you had services you installed on the command line, Webmin may not know about them. Now, I haven't used it that much, but I have had that happen where Webmin got out of sync and it's kind of a pain in the butt to fix it. This thing claims that won't happen. I haven't played with it very much beyond a couple of the demos, and it is interesting because it's a nice interface to a server. You know, if you're doing Linux-based stuff and running your own servers for things, they bill it as fairly secure. I don't know that I still wouldn't directly expose it to the internet if you're running your own servers. I'd put it behind something like an SSH tunnel, VPN connection. Proxy with a password on it, something. I don't think I would put this straight up on the internet just because it is your server's control panel. But, you know, they bill it as secure enough to do that. I can't recommend you do that, but they have a big article about how secure it is and how you can put, you know, certificates on it and go in and really lock it down and, you know, make a system pretty secure with it. But, it's still a straight login box on the internet, so I would still wrap it up with a VPN or something else before, you know, actually getting at it. Treat it like RDP or SSH or something like that, you know. But I thought it was interesting, and since, you know, probably ought to look at running some of your own systems at some point if you're, you know, concerned about not having everything you do living in somebody else's computer. But that's all I've got for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit, in the IRC tonight. Myself, Sardonyx, Cyberlord, Cycros, DP View, Madman, and the Coffee Maker. Madman, closing thoughts.
Closing thought with what we've been discussing. I want to continue talking about the whole philosophy of whether you or someone else is in control of your data. They also want to think in Digital Dojo, how to move into Linux.
Yeah, that's actually like, that's
common
not a bad
reasons
call
people
out.
Aren't in Linux. Like mine, I like gaming. Now, when Steam was pushing the whole "let's do our own system," they were starting to address games not running on Linux. They gave up their own system. That's slowing that process down again, I think.
Actually, a lot of the stuff they developed is still going. You know, they're the VXDK and the translation layers for using Wine with things like cards that support Vulkan are actually pretty good. Proton, that's what it is, Proton. It runs a lot. DPView says it runs everything. I haven't tried everything with it, so I don't know how true that is. But I know the last time I played with it, it was way more compatible than I was expecting. The big thing you run into, at least for me, that I've ran into with trying to run Linux full-time is, one, I have a lot of hardware that is Windows or Mac OS specific. I don't feel like buying Macs, so a lot of that stuff you get kind of tied to a Windows platform because it just does not work on Linux. I mean, either because it needs drivers, which just aren't there because the company hasn't provided it, or, you know, some people have gotten some of it to work under Wine, but it's not reliable. And, you know, I use Machine, you know, for one, dicking around with samples, but two, that's how I'm doing the soundboard. It's running Machine in the background, and I've got the controller hooked up to my computer right now. Plus, I've got a bunch of other hardware that's just specific and needs drivers. But as far as games go, Proton's actually pretty good project. I know that usually when brand new AAA stuff comes out, sometimes it can take a bit to be supported. DPView saying that for his experience, all the things run better than on Windows. The other thing you run into is the NVIDIA drivers on Linux aren't as good as they are on the Windows side. But if you have an ATI card, it's almost the reverse of that, where the Linux drivers are great and the Windows drivers are kind of suck. So usually you run into the problem of having the wrong video card.
The one thing, if people start seriously looking into it, they need to seriously look into it when they're about to do a build.
Yeah, you do need the right hardware, because if you've got something that's... With general PC hardware, it's not nearly as bad. The problem is I've got a bunch of niche stuff, you know, especially with the audio production stuff. And even with that, Windows is actually the second afterthought. They primarily support Mac for a lot of that stuff. Maybe I need to get back into Hackintoshing. get into dual and triple booting, but, you know, you still end up living in Win OS primarily when you do that. The other thing you can do is do VMs. So, like, if you have something that's Windows-specific, you can do a Windows VM from Linux to get a lot of it. But, you know, doing VMs correctly gets a little weird, where you end up having to have multiple graphics cards in a machine so you can pass one to the VM and figure out a way to, you know, manage your signal. So you might end up having to do a screens, you know, KVM switch or something on one of your screens, or it can get complicated quickly if you don't have quote unquote the right hardware, and it's not convenient. You know, it's a lot easier than it used to be. It is a lot easier to do a Linux desktop than it used to be. But it's not installed by default, and it's not the main supported thing, so you occasionally have to troubleshoot and figure out why something's not running and all that stuff. So, I mean, it's... But you're right, that's definitely a good idea to cover on Dojo. Are you? Closing thoughts?
Good. I'm done, man.
Okay. What do you guys think about something doing those kind of long-form discussions occasionally as opposed to just going straight into news articles?
Yeah, I'm happy to go any way you want to take the show, man.
Okay.
I know whether I have anything to say is another thing.
No. So, you know, if people want to use the usual feedback mechanisms, either throwing something at me in the IRC or on the, the subreddit or something. If, you know, like it, don't like it, let me know. I do like playing with some of the concepts and, I mean, philosophy, for lack of a better word. I don't know that it's really philosophy, but it kind of is.
Philosophy is a broader term than people get it credit for. It's a way of looking at life and system.
Well, in that case, yeah. So. But that's all I got. So I think we're going to close it out.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Johnson goes down and call the night.
Shut up, Wesley.